Perhaps you've heard that Anchorage has the most diverse and integrated public schools in the nation. It's an amazing fact and a point of pride for many people, but what does it mean for education? On today's edition of Hometown Alaska, we're going to try to find out and answer your questions. I'm Charles Wolforth. It's a bit of a historic and demographic fluke. Nobody ever intended to create exceptional cultural and racial diversity in Anchorage schools, but it is here, and it means adjustment for teachers and administrators working with students who speak many languages at home and come from many different perspectives. It's a great opportunity for our kids to learn about others and grow up without bias, but there are challenges too. And that's what we're going to be learning about today with your opportunity to get on the air with questions. And I have a terrific panel of guests. In the studio, I have two guests to talk about our topic and answer your questions. Ed Graff is a superintendent of schools for Anchorage School District. Thanks for being with us, Ed.
Thank you for having me, Charles.
And Imtiaz Azem is an assistant principal at Diamond High School.
Thank you, Charles.
And we're going to start out with a discussion about how Anchorage became the diverse place it is before we go into our conversation with Ed and Imtiaz. So I pre-recorded something that we'll play right now. My first guest today is Chad Farrell. He's a sociologist, associate professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage and chair of the sociology department, and an expert on demographics. And he's the person who has come up with this amazing fact that a lot of people have heard by now, that Anchorage has the most diverse neighborhoods and most diverse schools in the nation, which I think is something a lot of people are proud of, but maybe have trouble believing. Thanks for being with us, Chad.
It's a pleasure to be here.
What are the most diverse neighborhoods and schools in the nation?
Well, in terms of neighborhoods, Mountain View is at the top of the list. And then you have other parts of Anchorage that are also quite diverse. Russian Jack, for example, Spinard area. These are very, very diverse areas. As far as schools are concerned, we're looking at it. For high schools, it's East, Bartlett, and West. For middle schools, Clark is at the top of the list. And for elementary schools, 19 of the 20 most diverse elementary schools are here in Anchorage, and Wonder Park Elementary is at the top of that list.
That almost like strains the credulity. 19 out of 20 most diverse schools, elementary schools. That's amazing.
Yeah, and if you look at all public schools in the United States, it's a list of about 100,000 schools. If you take the top 50, elementary, middle, and high schools, 37 of the 50 at the top are here in Anchorage.
Truly incredible, truly amazing. And yet, I think our minority population in Anchorage is roughly 28% of our total mid-30s, 34-36%, and whereas the national average is 28%. So it's not massively more than other places. How does it come about that our schools are so diverse, in a community that's still predominantly white?
It's the distinctive mix of different racial and ethnic groups here. You just don't see so many groups of significant demographic size. So, and when I say significant, I'm not talking about statistical significance, but they have some demographic heft to them. So it means that they're large enough that they're a visible portion of the population. And there just aren't many areas in the United States that have so many groups that are not only present in a community, but of significant demographic size.
So let's define what that means exactly in terms of diversity from the statistical standpoint that you're talking about. Because obviously, to look at 100,000 schools, you've used a computer to compare a lot of information.
Oh, yes.
What data are you using, and how are you slicing it up?
Well, I'm using data from the Department of Education, and they collect data yearly on schools across the United States, public schools across the United States. And part of that data collection, they do have data on racial and ethnic groups, very similar to what the U.S. Census does. And they collect data on seven different groups: white, Black, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, Native, and then a group that I've been referring to as multi-ethnic, or people identify more than one race when they're asked to self-identify. So you have these seven very broad groupings, and basically what I've done is calculated this diversity index, which takes into account, you know, diversity, just in terms of demographic diversity, has two main components. First, multiple groups. So if a population, whether that population is a national one or a community or a state or a school, if there, the more groups that are present, the more diverse that population is. Then, in addition to that, it takes into account the size of the groups relative to one another. And if you have a population that has multiple groups and they're similar size to one another, then it scores very high on this diversity index.
So to make sure that I understand here, you're not taking sort of the universe of all ethnicities on Earth. So you could, if you had the data, you could say how many kids from Somalia as opposed to how many kids from Mali. We're not doing that. So there might be some community in California that has more different types of kids. But what you're doing is taking the data you got, which is 7 slices of the pie, and seeing that in Anchorage, we have very relatively similar size slices in these 19 schools and these high schools that you're talking about.
Yes, and that's one of the frustrating things about being a demographer is you're often relying on secondary data, and I wish I could get more refined data to do that sort of more refined analysis. So I'm left with these kind of 7 broad groupings. And I think that's an important point, that if anything, my analyses understate the level of diversity here and in other communities across the United States, because you know I'm forced to treat natives as an aggregate, and mm-hmm. of course there's a tremendous amount of cultural and geographic and linguistic diversity within that group. Same goes for Latinos, same thing goes for Asians and Pacific Islanders and across the board. So these are conservative estimates really.
Yeah, in terms of what diversity really means in practice. But one thing that people might not think about is that there's a group that is present here that in many minority communities or many minority majority schools outside of Alaska would not be present, which is whites. So when we look at our high school that's got a huge diversity and lots of Asians and natives and African Americans and Hispanics, the whites are still there, whereas in a lot of communities in Lower 48, they're not.
And that's true. And when you look down the list of all these schools across the United States that score quite high in this diversity index, as you get further down the list, you see a number of many schools that score quite high, but they don't have any white kids. And this diversity index treats all groups equally, and a school that doesn't have a significant white population is not as diverse as it could be. And that's one of many things that makes our schools exceptional, is that there is a significant white population. It's not a majority white population, of course, in many of these schools, but it's a significant one, and that contributes to the diversity score.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, in our national story, school integration has been such a major thing that we've attempted to get. And, you know, through the whole busing story and Brown versus Board of Education, I mean, it's a huge issue. And somehow we've attained that here in Anchorage, maybe not through any intention. How did this come about?
Well, and I think that's an important point. This just happened. And it's Anchorage has always been a crossroads. And I think of the diversity here as kind of a confluence of geography and history and economics. There's a lot of things going on here. Part of it is in terms of geography is we're a coastal city. Coastal cities tend to be more diverse than inland cities. We're in the western region of the United States, which is because of its proximity to Asia and Latin America, the most diverse region in the United States. So some of this has to do with where we are located. That's one of the contributing factors. Then there are institutional factors. We've modeled this and doing some multivariate statistical techniques, and one of the variables that really jumps out is presence of a military base. Cities that have military populations tend to be more diverse than those that aren't, because the military is an extremely diverse social institution here in the United States. So there are a number of factors that go into why we're so diverse.
Another thing that struck me in looking at the history of Anchorage, which is a topic I recently wrote a book about, so I was thinking a lot about it, is that we really didn't have community planning that was very effective for most of our history. And so we have a really unusual mix of housing types in Anchorage. Just thinking about like the area around West High, which I guess is like number 3 most diverse high school in the country, or according to your stats, you'll have an area right next to the school where there's a mobile home park. And then right next to that are some of the largest, most affluent homes in the entire city. And so you've got this patchwork, and so people are all feeding into the same schools because they never got divided. They were always mixed.
Yes, and you do see that here. I would never say we don't have segregation here in Anchorage, either racial and ethnic segregation or economic segregation. But when you compare us to many of the cities in the lower 48, it's a much lower level of segregation than you see in many, many other cities. And a lot of that has to do with the housing stock and particularly the rental housing stock. So that's part of what's going on here, contributing to our localized diversity.
So that's something we can feel kind of proud of, I guess. Even if we didn't bring it about, we at least didn't resist it when it happened. So is the mix of types of schools important too? I mean, that we have, we're pretty much 100% public school community. We don't have very many private schools.
That certainly plays a role here. And you know, I should mention, you know, we tend to concentrate at the top of these most diverse schools, but if you look across the school district, even schools that don't necessarily have a reputation for diversity, when you compare them to the lower 48, they still score quite high and above the national averages in diversity. And I think that says something about the diversity here, that some of our high schools don't stack up compared to East in terms of diversity, but they're still diverse compared to the lower 48. And that also says something about the levels of segregation that we see across schools in the United States, because you see much lower diversity levels in many other areas of the United States.
Yeah.
And some of that's segregation.
Interesting. Segregation that was very intentional over many, many years and is really hard to undo once it's there.
Yeah, you know, really part of policy for generations, and despite changes through the civil rights movement, we're seeing incremental decreases in segregation across the United States. But there's some evidence that's not necessarily happening at the school level. It might be happening at the neighborhood level, but schools are still perniciously segregated across much of the United States.
Yeah, and that has a lot of cultural impacts and social impacts. Well, thanks so much for being with us. This has been really interesting. Chad Farrell has been our sort of lead-off guest on today's show. Chad is Associate Professor of Sociology and the Chair of the Sociology Department at University of Alaska Anchorage. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And now we're back in the studio with Superintendent Ed Graft and Imtiaz Azem, who's Assistant Principal at Diamond High and has worked with incoming students from different cultures. And I wanted to start our discussion today. I want to make sure that folks know that they can get on the air with us, so I'll give out those phone numbers. And then I want to start a discussion today about some of the positives about this, that this is really a good thing. If you want to join us, the number here is 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if I gave those numbers too fast, just log on to alaskapublic.org and you'll find the phone numbers you need to get on the air with us. So, Superintendent Graf, I have four children. Two have graduated after going all the way through the district. Two are still in high school. I also was a product of the Anchorage school system. I saw them have a very different experience than I did, because when I was a kid, we didn't have this diversity and we do now. And one of my observations as my daughter and son went off to college is they really don't see race and ethnicity the same way that I did or that I do. It doesn't seem to be on their radar screen. And I feel like, wow, that's an amazing thing for us to have accomplished as a community.
Yeah, absolutely, Charles. I think just the notion that we can have students interacting with so many different groups, you know, whether it's a cultural difference, an ethnic difference, a gender difference, being able to have those interactions and learn, establish how you have social conversation and dialogue, and then they take that out into the real world and apply it. I mean, when we look at our adult lives and we say, you know, what are some of the most challenging things that I've encountered? Many times it's trying to work with another person and trying to understand where they're coming from. And so I think that there's a huge benefit and value in having our students be exposed to those opportunities in our schools, in a year-round kind of environment in our schools.
Yeah, and so much of what happens in school is not directed instruction, right? It's the environment that you're in and the kind of people you're around and learning to interact with them.
Right. We have a huge emphasis in the Anchorage School District on social-emotional learning, which really comes down to four components. One is self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and social management. And so we're providing instruction to students at an early age, ways to help them understand how they're feeling about things, you know, their self-management, the self-awareness, self-management piece. And then the social awareness and social management is how they interact with others, how do they interface, and what does that look like in developing that? Because what we're raising are global citizens, you know. We're a very diverse community. We're a very diverse state, and I think that for us to continue to provide high-quality education so that our students can prosper worldwide, we need to be able to expose them to those kind of opportunities in our schools. And we're proud to say we do.
Yeah. So, Imtiaz, you are an immigrant yourself. You came from Israel. You're now a U.S. citizen. What is the experience for you in coming to Anchorage and finding that it's quite a diverse place? I mean, did you feel welcome here? Did you feel like this was a good place to land up?
This is what I believe. When you know, my dream was always to, you know, pursue different opportunities for me. And America is the welcoming place. And this is when, even when you just step off the plane and you are in the airport, just can see this huge welcome to America. Mm-hmm. And this welcome to America is not only just welcomed me and then, you know, to the new culture, is that even I pursue my further education at Alaska Pacific University, where that community also helped me, you know, in Duverm or pursue my further education and to get me where I am right now. Is, yes, it was a cultural shock in the beginning, but even that, you know, the community here, if it's the professional community at APU or the immediate community, is that's what American all about. Mm-hmm. Is that generosity and that opening, you know, for welcoming other people to come and help them go through this, because they really wanted to add, you know, as I learn from them, they're learning from me. So that dual, you know, that helped great, and that's what is America all about.
And so you've been in your career in the role of helping new students who are coming from different cultures integrate into the school district. And tell me, what are the, I mean, obviously we have much more to talk about on this, and we'll talk about it through the whole hour, but sort of what are some of the things that you see in that experience of getting new students ready for being part of our school district?
It's very rewarding. I mean, our district is on top of it. The way I see it, they never sweep anything under the rug. We always prepared by actually also communicating to the outside community. When we get them, we always have that connection with Catholic Social Services, they give us like ahead of time who's coming and what kind of population we have. It has been changing, you know, since we, like 5 or 7 years ago. So when the kids come and we go through a process, I mean, if they are marked as they have another language that they speak at home, then we go through process of the, you know, registration, then we bring them to the newcomer centers where they take an assessment, we screen them, and based on their English, you know, background or how much English they know, then we actually then, you know, place them in the right, correct environment that they need to be at. So if they are really non-English speakers with no English or zero English, they stay at the newcomer center. Mm-hmm. If we see that they have some background in English based on their where they at as the stages of English development, then this is what, you know, refer them. It can be in any comprehensive school, you know, with ESL support, or they can be mainstreamed even to a regular classroom. So that's the process that they go through when they initially come to our district.
This sounds like a very complex problem to deal with, and something that one wouldn't sort of automatically think of as being part of running a school district. And what kind of complexity or cost does that add for the district, Ed Graff, in terms of bringing students in who may not have perfect English or may come from different perspectives?
Just to give you a scope of what we're talking about, almost over 47,000 students. We have more than 90 languages, once you address English as being the most prevalent language, then we get into Spanish, Hmong, Samoan, Filipino, Yupik, and close to 130 programs in schools. So you're taking those languages, and they're not perfectly displaced throughout, you know, this is one language only in this school.
You've got could be one or two here, one or two there.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then how do you provide the resource support needed for those students as well as the resource support needed for all your students? You have limitations in the number of people. You have limitations in the number of instructional time available. So what we have to do is we have to be very intentional and systemic about how we address this. And it starts with the foundation of what learning is, the social-emotional learning, making sure you have an awareness of the culture, the people around you, how you manage your, you know, in your social interaction, your self-management. And then we get into the instructional practices, the modality of things. Sheltered instruction, MTIAS mentioned that already, the differentiated learning, the individualized learning, the language acquisition. It's the foundation of learning, you know, making sure they have the key components of literacy and establishing that in our instruction early on in our student population when they come into our schools. And you build that. You build that through the content areas. We had training starting a couple of years ago where we took teachers in the secondary classes, specific content like math, social studies, reading, and we gave them literacy acquisition training specific to their content area. And, you know, in addition to that, they're getting the social-emotional strategies that they should be teaching in their class. So that's probably the best way to do it is you're very intentional in your practices and you have it happening systemically. Because if we rely on an individual as the resource, the focal point to make a difference, we're going to fall short. You know,
you'd have to have super person in every classroom.
Super person in every classroom, and you know, with close to 5,600 English language learners in our district.
Gosh, that's a lot.
It's not very possible.
So how much does it cost to do that?
So we roughly spend around $12 million a year in our budget, and it's a combination of general funds as well as funds from grants and other sources that come through federal state monies to support our ELL program and our students. And again, what we're trying to do is make sure that we have those where it's applicable be embedded into all of our classrooms. Awesome. Because the benefit for someone who is an English language learner as well as someone who may not be an English language learner could be just as great, you know, from what those services look like.
Yeah, let's take a couple of phone calls here. We've got some lined up, and I'm going to also give out the phone numbers for other callers who want to get on the air in just a minute. But first, let's go to Elise. Elise, did you have a question or comment?
Hi there. I want to thank you for covering this. This is just a great way to celebrate the wonderful diversity here. And I think so many of us saw the newspaper ads that didn't really know or the articles, but didn't know more depth about it. And I appreciate Mr. Raff explaining how we're working to serve the students. But I'm curious to know how or what kind of work we're doing to help diversify the teachers so that we have, you know, some of the student population reflected in the teacher staff. And maybe we do already. I just wanted to hear more about that.
I've heard a statewide stat on that something like 90% of our Alaska teachers are white, while we have this great diversity among.
And actually, what we do are we have ongoing conversations and professional development. Just recently, even our ELL department invited some of principals to go outstate and get more, you know, training and more information about how can they actually help our students, diverse students in the classroom. So we train the principal and the principal coming down and training their staff at their local schools. Is the also ongoing conversation is that when we transition students from an ESL program to the regular mainstream class, that data or that conversation continues and where the students at, the levels at their English competency, where is at, and how they can actually move them forward. Mm-hmm. So that's ongoing conversation.
I think I wasn't very clear. What I was trying to understand more about is whether or not we're working hard to bring in staff that represent the cultures of the many.
So they're matching in terms of a more African-American teachers, more Native teachers. Ed, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, absolutely. The issue of recruitment and retention in education as a whole is something that all districts are struggling with. I went to a conference a couple weeks ago and heard from a district in Florida where they were just saying, you know, we're having a hard time filling some of these positions. And so I think that is a national trend that we're seeing in education is just the pipeline for people wanting to go into the profession. You take that and you layer on the whole issue of is your population representing your student population, you know, your teacher population. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's not in the Anchorage School District. We have worked over the years to develop kind of pathways with kids and talking to students about, you know, you can be our scholar today and our educator tomorrow. So trying to find pathways for students to get engaged in the profession, building that up, as well as I think one of the most powerful things we can do in terms of recruitment and retention is present the value of working in the Anchorage School District and living here in Alaska. We aren't seeing the influx of people coming into Alaska anymore. Several years ago, where we had the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, when that went away, we had a lot of people, you know, coming, looking for work. And so we had a much more diverse pool. Less than two years ago, you know, we usually have a high number of elementary educators wanting to get into the field in the Anchorage School District. I think roughly 350 pool of applicants normally. We ended up with 150. So there's a decline in the overall pool of applicants that we have, and certainly making sure that it represents our diverse population is another challenge on top of that.
It's a priority that you'd like to go after, mm-hmm. but it's difficult.
It's a priority, yeah. And we're having conversations about it. We're putting together recruitment mm-hmm. plans and how we can continue to address this, but there is, it's a challenge. It's an absolute challenge.
Hopefully some of these diverse kids that we have for 13 years can be convinced that it's a good profession. mm-hmm. Thanks, Elise. That was a great question. If you'd like to get on the air with your questions or comments, the number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752, and the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now I'd like to go to Martha. Martha, did you have a comment?
Yes, I did. I appreciate the guest today, particularly having the superintendent on. Maybe within the past month or about a month ago, I called his office and talk with the secretary. And I do have to say, Superintendent, you have a wonderful staff. The secretary, who's been there a while, whose name I can't recall, the head one you have, is one of the best in the state. And I am calling for a couple of reasons. I'm listening to you, and I'm writing down notes. And I myself am Alaska Native. I was born in Anchorage, and I'm 57 years old. I attended Denali before it was Montessori Central, before it was a science center, and West High before it was diverse. So Anchorage, as I recall, was by design, going back to the early 70s when I was a teenager like you, Charles, who was born here and educated in an Ivy League institution after you left. Anchorage was by design zoned for racial segregation. When I was a teenager, my best friend, who I met at Central, lived in Fairview on the east side. I lived in the west side. And she ended up going to East High School, which was more diverse. And I ended up going to West High School, which was in early 70s, 80% white. When my brother graduated from there in 1966, it was 90% white. So through planning and zoning, we have racial segregation in Anchorage. We have a history of that. An earlier hometown show mentioned a black neighborhood that was basically set up because they had no other place to buy land and build. So,
yeah, I think that's true, Martha. I think that the clarification I would make is that because the city grew so rapidly in the 1970s, that those essentially racially segregated neighborhoods were just in the small downtown core area, Fairview, Mountain View,
actually,
downtown. And that as you go beyond that, there really wasn't any zoning. I mean, like you just had communities developing haphazardly and at random. But you're right.
There was very deliberate discussions about how diverse West High would be versus East High would be going back to the early 70s. And I know because that's how I lost my best friend. Which street would it be on? And basically, would it become more diverse? Would West High become a more diverse school? And I was going there, so I had to know. And then when I went back there as a journalist in the 90s, I was quite struck by the shift in population. And I myself celebrate the diversity in Anchorage, and I welcome it with open arms. And I wish we could be doing more as a community, especially for example the African refugees who are from war-torn countries. Mm-hmm. So my concerns are these: when we have a superintendent who comes from one of the least diverse districts in Alaska, speaking about diversity and talking about recruitment programs, what is the minority teacher population here in Anchorage? And if you could only say that in a sentence without making it a five-minute conversation. And then we have gifted programs here in Anchorage, and that's what I called your secretary about. And it has to do with we have a school that's for gifted children. We have a program that's for gifted children. We have college programs or college-bound programs like the seminar program at Service High School, and there are two-feeder middle schools that go into that. So we have a lack of diversity in our teaching staff. We have racial segregation, a history of that by design that continues to this day. The most diverse schools that you're talking about are also among the least performing in terms of academics, with some exceptions.
Okay, and Martha, you've made a whole bunch of points. Can we let our guests answer your questions?
Okay, let me give you one more example. The Alaska Native Charter School, if we're talking about expectations, which are part of the...
But you're moving on to a whole new topic. I want to let them answer the questions that we've got, okay? So let's just get to the question of the gifted programs and alternative programs, which are less diverse than the whole total population. Is that a concern, or is that an area for improvement that you're looking at, Superintendent Kraft?
With regard to the gifted program, it's a conversation that we've had for a number of years, and trying to figure out how we can expand that and still meet what that target population is. Highly gifted population across the nation is a very small percentage. Less than 2% of the population qualifies or fits into that category, if you will. But what we've done is we've actually looked at our identifiers, and we've targeted in certain areas, ways to expand that that access to the gifted program, because we know that there are some limitations for students because of their limited English or their limited background, that they really haven't had an opportunity to even be exposed to what would come out on a test or an assessment. So we do have a variation of that in our gifted qualifications for students to try and do exactly what Martha's talking about, making sure we're not limiting to a certain sector population of students. And the other piece with that is in the elementary schools, we now have the gifted program, which is known as Ignite, being offered in every single school. So it's not where students are bused to a location and they're pulled out of their school environment. Actually, we reverse that, and we have teachers going into the school and providing that instruction in the school population where students are most familiar. And I think that has a lot of benefit to students as well, because when you start to feel comfortable in your environment, you know, you want to stay in your environment. And perhaps for some individuals, being pulled out of that safe place and going transporting to another location limits their interest in perhaps accessing that. Yeah. So I think accessibility is a big challenge, not only with our gifted program, but with the alternative programs that we have across the district. And, you know, trying to figure out how can we provide better access to those programs. Right now, we do not provide busing for alternative programs. That's really up to the parents to be able to provide that busing. We've looked at it, did a study a couple of years ago about what would it cost us if we broke the district into quadrants and provided busing in different areas, and it would cost anywhere from $8 to $12 million a year to provide busing for certain sections of town. It wouldn't guarantee that you'd get it across the district as a whole. You'd get, you know, access to these programs in this area. So what have we been doing to try and address that? Well, we have a partnership with the municipality where they, in working with the district, have provided access to bus passes for kids at East High School. We expanded that to students at Bartlett this year, as well as students at Benny Benson. So again, trying to utilize the resources that are out there at a time when, you know, financially we're going to be addressing more challenges.
So we are going to take a break here, and I want to give out the phone numbers for more guests to get on the air. We've got some more questions that Martha raised that I want to get to in terms of achievement levels in the different schools. And I also want to get into sort of the teaching techniques and the sort of the fine-grained part of how do you work with a class that's very diverse, and how's that different from how it might have been years ago. So stick with us. My two guests are Ed Graff, the superintendent of schools here in Anchorage, and Imtiaz Azam, who's assistant principal at Diamond and has done a lot of work with bringing new students in from other cultures into our school district. I'm Charles Wolforth. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolfarth. Our topic today is the changing face of education in Anchorage, the diversity in our schools. And my two guests in the studio today are Superintendent Ed Graff of the Anchorage School District and Imtiaz Azam, who is an assistant principal at Diamond and has worked in the programs that bring new students in from different cultures and different languages. So many things to talk about, but I want to make sure that you have the access to our show today with these phone numbers, 550-8433. 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 888-353-5752. And the email to get on the air, if you can't call, it's a good way to do it, hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's talk about this this issue of achievement. And Imtiaz, maybe you can address this. Is there a correlation between higher diversity and lower achievement? Is that a problem that we need to be thinking about?
Well, we do, you know, but the way we are doing it at our district is that with well-articulated teachers and also focus on data and assessment, that this is our back, you know, that we depend on it, our background, that we depend on it so much, that we look at where our kids with their the state assessment scores and where are our kids at the local assessment in the classrooms. So we always, the teachers always, you know, alert to that, and they always, you know, making sure that they're using strategies and techniques and differentiation of instruction to make sure to meet all the needs of all mm-hmm. students. So to enhance that achievement, they're always an ongoing, you know, intervention. So the RTI instruction, response to instruction, that the teachers always making sure that targeting the students at the mastering the skill at the low level to make sure that they are giving the right intervention at the right level at the right time, and also meeting the needs at the intermediate or the more challenging students, that they want more challenge actually to move on forward.
Do you think that this is primarily caused by language barriers? Is it caused by, you know, coming from different types of schools? What causes this gap?
Well, I believe every student is an individual, is unique, the way they learn and the way they perceive knowledge and the way they interpret it. So it actually doesn't only, you know, account it for the diverse students, but, you know, it's to the way they actually perceive knowledge and the way they transfer it. So it's every individual is unique in their own way. So achievement and the way they process information, it comes, you know, with... It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter if you are, you know, come from different background or language. Yes, if you have the language acquisition, which is the English, as a barrier. But again, is the transition and moving those students by teaching them that language, which sometimes takes 2 to 3 years, the social, you know, language, mm-hmm. that being competent in that, or the academic language, it takes time. And yes, it does take time. However, the moving them to achieve, to be achieving, you know, what they need to achieve, the optimal potential that they need to have is the same for everyone.
Right. Okay. Let's go to Stan, who's calling. Stan, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. It seems logical if there's ethnic diversity that there would be ethnic tension, and I'm very curious as to what your guests would say is the level of ethnic tension in the schools, and then what advantages or disadvantages, or what are the factors that Anchorage brings to either not have those tensions or maybe create those tensions?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I certainly, if you go into the hallways of any Anchorage school, you'll see that students do tend to stick with people from their own background to some extent. So
the way if I you come mm-hmm. visit Diamond High School
okay.
and I work at Diamond High School and I work with the freshmen, juniors, sophomores, and seniors. Our district, what we're doing now and what we are embracing right now, implementing the social emotional learning, and it's not only, actually implementing in the classroom. And one testimony is one of our finest articulated language art teachers, Mr. Reese. What he does actually to diffuse the misconception, where is he at with diversity? He knows diversity is an important, subject. It's difficult to know about and hear about mm-hmm. it or even deal with it. So he to diffuse that misconception about where is diversity in his classroom. What he did the phenomenal things is that what he did introducing introduction to writing. What he did, he introduced himself. Where is he from? What is ways that he learns? How he is? Where is his weaknesses? What are his strengths? How he wants other people to perceive him when he, approach something.
Mm-hmm.
So he built that confidence, built that trust, and us, told students that this is a safe place here. You can say what you want. But the diversity from their stories. So when he told his story, I encouraged other students to tell their stories where they came from. So you can hear the students from Korea or from China or from Somal. Or that at a moment, I feel that momentum that he created, that non-threatening environment, that they accepted each other. They listened to the stories.
That's how you help connect them. Yeah.
That's exact. So you see that connection. So in that small classroom, that lived experience with each student was embraced that, they were thanking each other in the end, saying, mm-hmm. I didn't know this about you. Now I know.
Right. Well, making the district sound a little bit like paradise, and we know that there are racial conflicts in our society.
Yeah.
I think that, and maybe the caller would agree with this, but I certainly remember conflict between races, between cultures where people, go after each other for that reason. It must still exist, and how do you deal with it?
I think it obviously exists. You know, mm-hmm. the tension that a person feels is genuine, and we can't dismiss that, and mm-hmm. whether it's because of, a different race or a different culture or a different feeling, I think that's something that has to be acknowledged. I don't know that it's at the level it once was.
I think that
has been reduced. And I think the way that we continue to address that is very much what MTIAZ mentioned, is that you have the conversation, you talk about it. When there's a misunderstanding or an unknown, people go to a place of filling that information with what they, what's familiar to them. And so we try and open that up and have the conversation about, here's who I am, here's who this person is, and building on, why someone might feel the way they do. And that goes back to the social-emotional learning, the self-awareness. When I stand next to this person, how do I feel? Why do I feel that way? Understand my reaction to that. So I think it's an important conversation to have, because I think there are people who feel a certain way about being uncomfortable with, some of the tension they're feeling, and we have to make sure that we acknowledge that and then help to address that in a supportive manner. And I think we are continuing to do that as a district. I think the other question that Stan had was, what are the factors that add to that and build some of those tensions or tenuous situations? I go back to, we have a multicultural education concerns advisory committee, and we did a panel earlier this year with students, former graduates who are now at the university in the TRIO program, which is a program to transition students into the university who have not, their first time and their family going into university. And we had a student who shared an example of how he felt in a classroom and the absence of a teacher responding to an incident that he felt was derogatory about his culture and his mm-hmm. ethnic background wasn't addressed. And so that just built upon his feeling and his tension and frustration. And so I think it's genuine conversations like that where we're willing to acknowledge, like you said, Charles, we're not perfect. And there are things that are going on, and we need to make sure that we're mindful of every situation and looking at every individual students and through their lens and what their feeling and story might be. And I think that's something that I'm trying to communicate to everyone as a superintendent. Every student out here has a story, And it's our job to make sure we're listening to what that story is and providing the support around that as best as possible and in the most systemic fashion across the district.
It's a big, big challenge. Mm-hmm. Stan, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for being with us. You know, there was an article in this morning's Alaska Dispatch News that addressed the national statistics that students, African American students, are disciplined more frequently for the same things as white students. And I didn't know if that's something that you're aware of in the local setting, or if you have a way of dealing with that. Ed, you're nodding.
Yeah, we just did a report. We did a suspension report of last year, and that statistic was, in fact, what we found in our analysis, that we are suspending more students, African-American boys, than other students. There's a disproportionality. Mm-hmm. We also have students with disabilities who are being suspended more frequently.
Oh, dear.
And so I think, you know, what I go back to in looking at that data is making sure we're doing our ABCs, the antecedent, you know, what prompted that incident and why it occurred. And then we look at the behavior itself and then what those consequences are. So it's not a case of where we understand just by looking at a number. We really have to do more work and training with everyone and analyzing the situation, being able to read how a student comes in, what's their background situation happening at home, what is the interaction they're having with someone. Do we really understand that Charles should be sitting next to Ed when they just got done, you know, playing basketball and they're both frustrated because one person won and the other person lost, you know, some of those things. And then how do we help help the student manage those emotions that they have? So it's some of that anticipatory stuff, knowing your students, being able to understand the situation, and then addressing the behavior. Absolutely, you know, addressing the behavior and making sure if it's an unsafe behavior, you know, we have to address that. And unfortunately, sometimes that does mean taking kids out of the school situation. You know, at the same time, we don't want to limit their access to education and learning, but we've got to provide a safe learning right. environment for all mm-hmm. students.
Do you have any concern? And you could both answer this, but in terms of we were talking earlier, and Martha also brought up the lack of diversity in the faculty, that the faculty is not as diverse as the students are, potential bias among teachers, and that might contribute to this issue of disparate discipline. Do you think that's an issue?
I think the issue that I see, and this comes from my own personal experience, is that students need to feel connected with someone, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's done so with just the visual acknowledgement,
could affect the behavior too.
You look like me, I look mm-hmm. like you, and I don't think you can dismiss that. Now, that being said, I know that my background, most people would not, you know, expect for me to have that level of diverse background that I had growing up.
You grew up in rural Alaska.
I grew up in many different rural mm-hmm. communities, and from the Cheyenne River Reservation to Pine Ridge Reservation out in Savoonga to Hooper Bay. And so I think that I have a stronger connection to what some of the cultural sensitivity would be, not only for those indigenous people, but as well as people in general. And I think that those kind of stories have to be told and shared because it's powerful for students to hear that. But I also acknowledge that, you know, when you're in an environment where someone looks like you and dresses like you, that is a comforting feeling to students as well, especially students who are wanting to be connected in our schools. So the more we can share that, and the more we can provide those experiences for our students, I think the better it's going
to
be for them.
And to add to that is that, again, is we always look at what happened yesterday and what happened today. So, yes, looking at our data and has a, what is it that we're missing? So we are, as a district right now, is the de-escalation process, is that listening, really, you know, have received that time, you know, that extra time when we talk to the students, what is happening here? What made you behave the way you may behave today? You know, and again, our ultimate goal is to keep them safe at school. When you jeopardize their safety, their own safety and safety of ours, we don't, you know, negotiate here. Mm-hmm. But when it's things that, yes, you know, I take full responsibility, you know, on my action, this is what I learned, this is what I'm going to go and spread, you know, the message that what's happening here. Give them that time to listen to their stories, what made them behave the way they behave. This is, again, this is going to embrace where we're going to be spreading an equal and equal, you know, and fair.
Such an interesting conversation. All these questions are coming to my mind, but I want to give out those phone numbers. We have about 10 minutes left. If listeners want to get in on our conversation about school diversity in Anchorage, the number here is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. So if you're within the bowl, it's 550-8433. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. The experience of teaching in a very diverse classroom must be different from the experience of teaching in a homogenous, you know, all-white classroom or even an all-minority classroom. And I would think we were just talking about this discipline issue, for example. Different cultures raise children in different ways. They might have different ways that they discipline kids. They might have different expectations. So as a teacher, and I'd like to hear from both of you, you've both taught in these settings, how do you sort of make those adjustments? How do you sort of work through that? That sounds very challenging.
For me as a teacher, I would go back to trying to understand this individual student. And I think that that's, again, what I'm trying to create is a super, understand the individual student and their family situation. Once you have an understanding of that, then figuring out the best way to communicate and connect with that student and their family, that I respect where you're coming from. These are the, you know, the things that we need to accomplish in our classroom. And so together, we're going to make sure that this is, you know, an environment where we can do that. And I need your cooperation, support, everything else. But I'm not going to compromise the safety, you know, the responsibility and the respect of learning in
here. So the teacher today is no longer, you can't just be good at math and go through the textbook, right? You've got to really be an ambassador and somebody who can understand a lot of different types of people and work with them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is where, again, is the more they get to know the individual, as an individual, the more they get to help. And one of our actions is not only the social emotional thing, learning that we're implementing, our district embracing the Danielson framework, which is a huge component in building that rapport with students as a teacher, is get to know the students even outside of the school setting. What I mean by that is that what's going on beyond, what's going on in his belief system, as his actions, his behavior, why he's behaving like the way he behaves, what's going on outside, if anything with his own, you know, immediate setting. Mm-hmm. So we get closer. That connection, that communication, yes, it takes time, you know, but what? It opens, you know, ongoing identifying perspectives of the students and connect with the teachers, and this is how they make a learning community a more successful learner.
Right, so about this human one-on-one connection.
Yeah. Charles, you brought up a good point also about just how people have different understandings of what education looks like in their culture and their background, and I think it's important for us as teachers to really tune into that, whether it's someone who had a poor experience in their educational lifetime, you know, and they're holding that as, you know, what everything is going to look like for their child, or if it's just a cultural thing where, you know, they turn over education to the school and they don't expect
because that's how they did it back home.
Yeah,
right.
They don't expect to be involved in it anymore.
Yeah. Let's go to another caller. Janice had a comment about volunteerism. Janice?
Yes, I wanted to ask the superintendent about volunteerism in the school district. Years ago, like 40 years ago, when I lived in Indiana, I responded to a request from the school district there to help out. At the time, there were quite a few migrant children in the schools there who spoke Spanish and needed help with learning how to read, and they solicited for people just to come and spend time one-on-one with one of the kids and help them to get up to speed, so to speak. I'm retired now, and I would kind of like to do that again. I think, even though I'm not a teacher, I have no background in education, but I did have three kids of my own, and pretty much taught them reading or helped them with their reading. And I was wondering if there's any kind of a program. I've heard of Rural CAP and the Elders Mentor Program, but I'm not sure if you have to be native.
That's a great question. Is there a way that some multilingual parents or community members can help?
Absolutely. I would say, you know, there's a neighborhood school probably nearby you, and I think that would be a great place to start. We're always looking for ways to build the interaction between the school and the community. And so I would first start with contacting your principal at the neighborhood school. It could be an elementary, middle, or high school. And volunteerism, you know, what you described is reading with a student. We want to make sure, first of all, that we understand a person's background before we're going to have them working in our schools with students. But there are many ways to volunteer, from, you know, whether you want to help with on the PTA, or you want to get involved in some kind of community service learning project, or you have a specific skill set that you think you can assist a teacher with. I know at my last school, I had several people who wanted to work with a teacher. And so the teacher said, hey, I can use someone to come in and help assist in developing materials for the students. And then that can evolve over time to where, you know, you find your comfort level and the school finds its comfort level with what your involvement can be and the consistency. I think that's the big thing, is finding a consistent routine, because once people start to rely on that, you know, we want to make sure that we're
Teachers don't like it if you show up and don't come back. Yeah, thanks, Janice. That was a great question. It just, in the couple of minutes we have left, it leads me to ask, how are the different ethnic community associations in Anchorage interacting with the schools? Because I know we have some very strong groups, Filipino groups, we have Samoan groups, Korean groups. Are you seeing those groups become involved in the schools and in the work that you're doing?
We are. I can let MTL speak to a specific school, and then I can talk as a broader.
Yeah.
When they're very generous, actually, when we have multicultural, you know, celebrations, so they come and share that piece with us. You know, if it's, they have some of them would be our students or elderly. It's all you know, it's across all ethnic groups. So this is evident in our school, and they're very generous. They come and participate. So they are part of it, you know. Other thing is that...
And that must add a lot to making the kids feel like it's their school.
Their school, mm-hmm. Exactly. And they're proud, because this is actually a reflection or represent their culture and their background.
Mm-hmm. In just about a minute we have left, I think you wanted to add something, Ed.
Yeah, so one of the two groups that reports directly to the superintendent is the Multicultural Concerns Education Advisory Committee. And we are having our meeting tomorrow night, October 29th. It's going to be hosted by Monica, who's the executive director of the Alaska Museum of Science and Nature. And it's going to be at the Alaska Museum of Science and Nature. And what we're planning to have in that discussion is talking about education equality and what equity and what that looks like. So, and those individuals on that committee represent all facets of the Anchorage School District and the Anchorage community. So if people are interested and wanting to get more involved, that's certainly a great place to start. We actually have positions, vacancies, and we're wanting to fill those positions. And so you can just go get on our website, asdk12.org, type in MECAC, and we have a webpage there where there are applications, and we'd love to have people who are interested in being involved in the Anchorage School District.
Perfect. Perfect ending for our show. Well, it's been fascinating. It went by so fast. It's such a big topic and so rich. We're going to be doing more shows on education on Hometown Alaska roughly every month, so stick with us as we go forward. You can learn all about it at alaskapublic.org. I want to thank Ed Graff, Superintendent of Schools in Anchorage.
Thanks, Charles.
And Imtiaz Azam, Assistant Principal at Diamond. Thanks for being
Charles.
With us.
Thank you.
Next week, tune in. Kathleen McCoy will be the host. She'll be talking to the new mayor-elect out in Mat-Su, Vern Halter, who was just elected this month. Evan Erickson is the producer of Hometown Alaska. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. I'm Charles Wolforth. Thanks for being with us.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.